Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like worried of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of The Emma Gunn Show. How are you? I sincerely hope you're very well. I'm delighted to bring you this episode today. It's with Annabelle Rivkin and Emily McMeekin from The Mid-Alt. And if you are in the market for just over an hour of conversation between three women who are on the same page about a lot of stuff, open to learning new things, feel very strongly about topics like anxiety, about being empowered and actually not having to be perfect, then I think this might just be a great episode for you to tune into. Now, I know I say it every single week that we cover everything in this show, but by Jiminy, I honestly think that we do. I thoroughly enjoyed recording this show. And one of the reasons that I was sitting down with Emily and Annabelle at the time that I did was because they have a book coming out called I'm Absolutely Fine, an absolutely brilliant read that I will obviously put the link to in the show notes, which you will find on Apple Podcasts, Acast, and wherever it is that you are streaming and downloading the show. You'll also find all the social media links for Annabelle, Emily, The Mid-Alt, and obviously the link to The Mid-Alt. It is a brilliant, brilliant source of information, comfort, and community. I definitely recommend that you go and look at it. It's got fun. It's also got some really serious stuff on there. There are some brilliant directories with like what happens during mediation, which, to be honest, is a great resource to have at your fingertips. So definitely worth having a little mooch around The Mid-Alt website. But also, this book is brilliant because you can dip in, you can dip out. It's such an easy read, but it's not a linear one. And you'll hear me talk about this in the show because I've read the book and I talk about that with Emily and Annabelle. But I don't feel like I should rabbit on any longer. I feel as though we should get straight into this conversation. It really was a lot of fun. And I do believe that we have become lifelong friends from recording this show. So how wonderful is that? If you want to get in touch with me, if you listen to this episode and you think, I know, I'll drop Emma an email, why not do it? I would love to hear from you. Email me at thebeautypodcast@gmail.com. You can also slip into my DMs on social media. I am at Emma Gunns on Twitter and Instagram. And there is, of course, that private Facebook group. The link to join is in the show notes. So just go ahead, click that link, ask to join, and I will approve you relatively quickly. I do try and do a round of approval at least once a day. Here they are, Annabelle and Emily from The Mid-Alt on The Emma Gunns Show. I feel like I want to do a spinal tap, like...
I feel really mad today.
This bodes well. This is a better podcast when people are mad. Honestly, we love a bit of nonsense. Okay. So, I am here with Annabelle Rivkin and Emily McMeekin from The Mid-Alt. And it's exciting. Say hello, guys. Annabelle, you start so people can tell you guys apart if they don't already know your voices.
Hi, I'm Annabelle. I'm the cross one.
Hi, I'm Emily.
And Emily's pure sunshine.
Apparently.
You're brimstone.
Yeah. Emily is oppressively happy. I'm not.
I sometimes come to work and I say, I just want to warn you, Annabelle, I'm in a really good mood today.
I, oh gosh. See, I think I try to be you.
and fail daily.
To be in a good mood.
To be in a good mood, to walk into a room and to bring sunshine to it.
I just really, I don't know. Weirdly, a lot of it dates back to, and I've talked about this before, that a friend of my dad's, when I was about 14, said to me, "You know, Emily, when you don't smile, you look really plain."
That's a terrible thing to
and
say.
And she's been grinning ever since.
So I sort of feel like my smile starts just out of, and then it just, the whole of it, I've just programmed my brain to just be perky. Like, perk is good. So I don't know if I...
But maybe part of that is faking it to make it, because I think you are genuinely happy. So maybe you started grinning through self-loathing and ended up having quite a nice day.
Yes, I can see that it makes... And I also, again, I'm such a people pleaser as well. Mm. I really do enjoy bringing a bit of sunshine to people's lives. God, that makes me sound like I'm not like Mother Teresa or anything.
She almost is. She's a very, very nice person.
There's a big difference between sunshine and much needed medical supplies, though.
That's also true, exactly. And raising awareness for. Yeah. No, I just like to smile at people and make people feel good. And it makes me feel good.
Mm.
And sometimes that goes wrong. And my therapist has put me under strict instructions not to volunteer for anything anymore. Because someone says, "Would you dress up as a bunny and come to this 10K and clipboard people in on Saturday morning?" "Oh, yeah, of course I will." So I've got to stop that now. So now I go, my therapist says I shouldn't volunteer for things. And people go, "Walk back slowly." And it's actually incredibly effective if anybody wants a good excuse.
But actually, it's quite a nice balance between us because, you know, it's kind of good cop, bad cop. And I can be quite grim and Emily is very chirpy. But I've probably got the softer centre in a funny way.
I was about to ask you that. Yeah. I completely get that.
I'm just so bruisable.
Mm.
And so it's slightly Operation Human Shield. I'll hide behind the happiness.
I'm stealing that. Yeah. My brother once, and I've told this story before on the podcast, so I'll keep it tight. We were meeting up and he saw me and he said, "Part of me didn't want to come over because you had your Force 10-bit shield up." And I'm your brother, and I didn't want to come and say hello, and we had arranged to meet.
My therapist calls it transmitting interference.
I like that
because
very
I'm obscuring what's actually going on. So if I'm particularly cross, it's usually because I'm particularly frightened.
Yes, I know that instinctively. I mean, Annabelle and I have worked together for 15 years, so if I come in, that's why I warn her about the good mood for a start. And sometimes I go, "I think I want to hug you. Is that okay?" And she's like, I can tell whether she's transmitting interference or she would actually quite like a hug.
Emily will say, "I'd like to hug you. How do you feel about that?" And sometimes I'll say, "Okay," and go limp, like a sort of sad donkey. And sometimes I'll say, not this morning.
That's so interesting. That is.
We are completely codependent, actually. But... yes, and so I think that's the brilliant thing about working with someone that you've worked with for so long and setting up a business together with someone that you work with so long, because I know her moods and I also know nothing is personal.
It's like it's now got so personal that you don't take anything personally.
Right, so it's breached the fourth wall.
It's trust, actually. Yeah. It's complete trust.
How curious about this, because I've had emails from women who have started businesses with friends and they say that they feel like they're struggling with the feeling equal in the relationship. Do you guys feel equal?
I think we both have an idea of what we bring to the party.
Mm.
And we both value the other's contribution sort of almost above our own.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think so, really. We pass the baton back and forth because it also depends. There's so much, in the rush hour of life.
There's
so much background that you bring, is that if one day one of you is feeling very depleted, then the other one will pick up the slack. Yeah. So I think that we're pretty well. What do you think?
Well, I think two things. I think one, setting up businesses with friends as opposed to setting up businesses with people that you've worked with before is really a big distinction. I mean, Annabelle and I were work friends first before we became friends and then became business partners. So we knew what the other person does and how they operate day to day, and I think that's incredibly helpful because you can be friends with people, really brilliant friends with people, but working
but you with might them, not actually know how they cope when the chips are down, when they're tired. Ooh. You know, you might not know what they do in order to be able to cope, and sometimes that's not that pretty. But if you've seen it day after day and you've clung to each other's desks like life rafts as you've sat in an office, then it may mean more than it does, more than it seems to, or less.
Yeah, and I think the other thing is that we because we made a big decision as setting up a business, you know, run by women, that everything is okay. Mm-hmm. All the shit you need to do, whether it's go to a therapist, get your roots done, or you need to go and have a nap because you're exhausted, or whatever it is.
Emergency root canal, you know, physiotherapy on your twisted ankle.
Yeah.
I mean, any of these things that have come up in the last practically week alone.
Yeah. And it's okay. You know, we don't say to each other, well, you know, we've got to get this done. We just say, yeah, well, do what you need to do. And I think because, like Annabelle said at the beginning, it's trust. It's trust.
Yeah.
We trust each other to bring everything that we can or when we can to the table.
I definitely, and this might sound a bit over dramatic, but I think I have PTSD from having strict bosses who are like, no, I need, you said that you'd be in by 10. Like if I said I've got to go to the doctors and then there's a waiting room full of people and you're ending up late and then you start getting the text. I definitely, and I've been working for myself for 6 years and I still get like a slight stress response when something like that happens.
I totally agree. And actually, you know, when we first started and we said, you know, it was a bit tentative, those kind of, I think I need to go and do this or whatever.
Yeah, in case the other one went, but that's not okay.
Mm.
I mean, what do you think we're trying to do here? That's not good enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, you're setting up, you know, these are high stakes. And so, but actually it is okay. And of course, as a result, the whole of the environment is so much happier.
Mm.
And I think that we would continue to do that once we're, you know, multi-million.
Because also, Emily and I are both all carrot, no stick. So if someone says to me, you know, if I want to leave a party, my best friend does this. And if someone says, well, I mean, I think that's rude. I really don't know why you're leaving so early. You know, the birthday cake hasn't come out yet. You know, it may be I'm leaving early because I've been awake since 3 a.m. because I've got fucking appalling insomnia.
Mm-hmm.
But if they say that, I'm out the door within seconds.
Mm-hmm.
If they turn around and go, oh, but it just wouldn't be the same without you. Please stay because I really love you. I go, oh, of course I will.
Yeah.
And we're both like that. So, you know, a telling off is not going to do anything good for me or for my productivity.
Oh, yeah. It puts my back up massively.
Puts my back up.
And those structures, that presenteeism, all of the things that are happening in businesses all the time for people is, I think, incredibly just sort of reductive for creativity. I think lots of people are just sitting there on Facebook hoping that it's going to get to 5 or 6 or whatever. And actually, you get a lot more out of people when you say to them, do it when you're going to do it well, I know you can do it well, all of that stuff, rather than just saying, you know, these are your hours, this is what we expect.
I've seen that firsthand this year and it was really puzzling. Like what on the outside looked like a creative environment, then you get in and nothing's getting done.
Yeah.
But there's lots of team building and there's lots of meetings, but
strategizing around strategy.
And then every week you go to the same meeting at the same time and everyone sort of says the same things and congratulates each other that we all agree. Yeah. And you're like, what? Anyway, you mentioned then about coping mechanisms not being pretty. What would you say yours are, you guys? And then we will get on to the very exciting news about the book.
Coping mechanisms. Well, I think that I know that when I'm really in a bad way, I just go swimming and that helps me cope, but that's fine. I don't know. Interesting. Annabelle?
I have yet to identify, apart from alcohol, medication. I mean, exercise does help.
Mm.
I mean, I feel like an arsehole for saying it. And until I was about 35, if someone had said that to me, I mean, I'd never run for a bus.
Mm.
And then I had a really bad breakup and completely disintegrated and kind of got addicted. And you know what they say? They say it takes 3 months. And I remember I dragged myself to the gym every day and I loathed it. And on the 90th morning, I woke up and I thought, oh, this is just what I do now.
How funny.
Yeah, so it, you know, it just does help with the, I'm not sure it helps, I'm not sure it makes you happier, but I think it makes you less likely to actually collapse in on yourself.
Yes.
You may not end up dancing for joy. I mean, I'm never, frankly, dancing for joy. But it might put off a real, a proper kind of crumble, a proper disintegration.
Also, I think it's a moment for myself. And I think, you know, as you said, the rush hour of life, there are very few moments that I have myself, apart from when I go to the loo, which is all the time. But
she has a bladder the size of a lentil.
So... I know, when you said this is going to be an hour, I was like, oh, I don't know if I'm going to make it.
I'll give you a hall pass. Annabelle will fill in.
Please, miss. I just put my hand up. But yes, a moment, I've just taken that moment for myself, the swimming.
Mm.
And even if it's just 20 minutes in a pool, like a dunking, it does reset. But
you've both touched on something very interesting, and the gym, swimming, it's doing something for you. That's what I think it is. I definitely, looking through the life that I've already lived through the lens of, I don't think I had that many coping mechanisms. So all I had was brimstone, just a hard shell.
Just the rage.
The rage and the anger and the resentment. And something like the gym, I have to do. And on mornings when I don't feel physically able to do it, I get myself out of bed and I go and do something easy, which is cycling, because you're sitting down. And I do that for half an hour because I think, if I can't do it physically today because I'm physically tired, I'll give myself a pass, but I have to do it for my brain.
Do you know what helps me, actually, because I've got a very busy brain and it moves too fast. And this sounds, you know, it sounds very good housekeeping, and that depresses me, but cooking. And I tell you why. And not cooking as in, I've now got a dinner party for 8 and I'm going to make a souffle, because that's just pressure. I just mean maybe I'd make a chili or something, because it's the pootling around the kitchen thinking, oh, I've just dropped a bit of onion. Mm. Oh, where's the sea salt? You know, with the radio on, that lets my brain wander in a way that it doesn't for the rest of the day. Because even when I'm exercising, I mean, while I'm sort of, you know, physically pounding away on the cross trainer or whatever that absorbs the impact on the dodgy ankle, my brain can still, you know, think. Whereas if I'm having to slightly, you know, chop something or stir something, it just lowers the intensity that's happening, you know, between my ears.
It's methodical, isn't it? And exactly. I that's why I'm excellent at putting together IKEA furniture, I think. Because it opens up a channel in my brain that I don't use very often, which is slow this, then that, ABC,
one thing at
linear,
a time,
exactly.
Right? So, yeah.
Oh, both those things just make me feel completely stressed out immediately.
Genuinely just feel as though I had a breakthrough.
That happens. Honestly, this happens to us all the time, because everything about the mid-art and everything that we do is about conversations that we have with ourselves, with people, with our friends, and exactly, and we got to the point where we just unpack everything between each other, and that is just fantastic, because actually it is like therapy, daily therapy.
So then you have a revelation and then you immediately forget it.
No, I don't think I'll forget that one.
Quick, write it down.
No, I've recorded it.
You're such a Luddite.
But we are here to talk about I'm Absolutely Fine, which is the first book
it is.
From the mid-alt, and it's a manual for imperfect women. And I sat down to read this in a linear fashion, and then I was just telling Annabelle and Emily, listeners, that I quickly realised it was a dip in and outable, and it's not a book, it's like a Mary Poppins handbag, and you open up a page and you reach in and you have no idea how far down it's going to go, but there's going to be something incredibly useful that you will pull out of it.
I love that description. Yes, we're going to use that.
I think we you know, it's sort of all the colours of our rainbow, and we put it down, and then we thought, well, how are people going to use this book? And then we thought, well, they're going to use this book however the fuck they want to use this book, because they've had enough people telling them what to do in their lives. So we'll just, you know, put it out there. And I guess the architecture of it is a bit like a cookbook in that it has, you know, quite lyrical, often quite sort of pain-filled, you know, essay introductions. Then you go into these short, sharp, mad little sequences and dialogues and
listicles, which is great.
All of that kind of thing. But really, we just thought, you know, people can do whatever they want with it. We'll just put it on the table.
I think because when it landed on my desk, I thought, oh, this is going to be like self-help chapter by chapter, and by the end, all the component chapters will result in a better me. And it really isn't that. And it made
it
me
really
like.
It doesn't.
No, what we say is this is not a self-help book, and yet we hope it helps.
Yes, and I love that.
Because the background to it, you know, we've had, you know, there's quite a lot of therapy and quite a lot of kind of recovery between us. But what we wanted to do was reskin it so there wasn't that very triggering, quite irritating language. So, you know, in this, the chapter on body image is called Does This Straitjacket Make Me Look Fat? Or the chapter on anxiety is called Where the Wild Thoughts Are? Or the chapter on sex, I think it's called What Could Possibly Go Wrong? Because otherwise it all just gets a bit worthy and a bit oppressive. And when I read that sort of stuff, it makes me feel rebellious.
Yes.
So we just wanted to, you know, go with the flow.
And also we're just writing what we know.
Yeah.
So I mean, Annabelle has a brilliant anecdote about how some of the mid-alt started.
Oh, yeah. So I'm not sure it's brilliant, but it is true. Is this the dinner party?
It is the
dinner
party.
Okay, so I went to dinner, and it was during my summer of anxiety, one of my summers of anxiety. I'd completely stopped sleeping. And
I'll put a pin in that.
Yeah.
And I was really losing my shit, quietly and privately. But I went to dinner, and it was just women, and it was quite successful, glamorous women with big media jobs and, like, really flashy, splashy, much more than me. And someone said, "How are you?" And I forgot that I was meant to say, "I'm absolutely fine." And I said, "I'm so anxious that I can't sleep. I'm absolutely terrified. I think about death all the time," or something, mm-hmm. some iteration of that. And they all started talking at once, and one started saying, "Oh, God, I don't want to have sex with my husband, but I really love him." Another one was saying, "I think I'm going to die on the streets, a bag lady." Another one was saying, "I've been on this medication." And I thought, "Oh, okay, so this is interesting." Anxiety is the glue that binds us together, and we're all coming out about that, and the idea of being imperfect and really talking about that now, because shame can't survive being spoken, and we've all carried a lot around for a long time. And we thought, okay, so this is about grown-up women. Maybe the thing about being grown-up women is that it sits in the Venn diagram where anxiety meets potential, because, you know, there are still, you know, we can press reset, we can make different choices, but it's just the stakes are a bit higher than when you're a student and you don't have a mortgage and you don't have a job and you don't have, you know, various responsibilities.
So we just wrote it all down, all the terrible, brilliant, painful, humiliating, shameful, funny, ridiculous secrets or things that we've been carrying around for forever.
We basically just rifled around in our emotional knicker drawers. And what was quite fun, though, was we suddenly realised that, because people started shouting to us in the street, "How do you know what's going on in my head?" was that we were sort of... because none of our stuff has our name on it. It doesn't say it's by Annabelle or it's by Emily. So we were looking at, like, the collective personal. It was very, very personal, but it kind of belonged to all of us. And because we didn't have to put our name on it, it didn't feel quite so scary to say, "This is what happened to me," or, you know, "These are all the men I've slept with," or, you know.
Until now.
Yeah.
This is the thing. When I started this podcast, I sort of danced around a few of the things I've gone through, one of them being anxiety, really crippling anxiety.
How did yours manifest, your anxiety? Because
slowly, but with stealth, but hot, and then it sort of all came to a head. That's a good question. It started with being nervous about going outside.
Really? What, just suddenly like that?
No, sort of just...
So not necessarily to, like, a party, but just leaving the house?
Yeah.
Right.
So it would start with if I did go outside, feeling like I was missing a layer of skin, feeling very, very on edge. And so limiting, like thinking, "Oh, I won't go to that launch in town." Or if I did think about it, it would do that thing in a movie, you know, where you look down a corridor and the corridor suddenly becomes like a million miles long. It would feel like the just getting out of my house, just getting to the station to get on the train would be...
Yeah, because anxiety is a great isolator.
Yes.
You know, in whatever form it comes in, it will, you know, it makes you alone, doesn't it?
Well, and RuPaul says this, and I was listening to the RuPaul podcast, and it was when it kind of, it was one of the things that snapped me out of it. And RuPaul says we all have an internal saboteur, and that internal saboteur's objective is to get you alone and kill you.
Mm.
And it was listening to that when I was like, "Oh, I'm letting it win."
Yeah. I mean, when I go through periods of anxiety, which I have done... lots. It's really in sort of decade type. So when I left university, when I turned 30, just before I turned 40, interestingly, it kind of those things hit. And it starts off with little things like I worry that I haven't locked the door. And so I go back.
Yep.
And then when it's really bad, I'm like halfway to the station and then I'm going back to check. And So I can see those tiny little things start, and then because we're so, you know, I don't want to keep saying busy because because we're so distracted, you kind of think, "Oh, well, of course that's just my anxiety or whatever." And then, you know, mine, when it has hit, accelerates hugely, and I end up hearing voices that are telling me I'm a terrible person and that they're going to come and take me to hell, and I just sort of have to hold on to the sides and hope that it, and, you know, let
it's
it...
like turbulence.
Basically, yeah, exactly like turbulence, like inner emotional turbulence, except for I've managed to bring these voices to life, these kind of demons. And the only things that stop that have been talking therapy and... Shall I say swimming again?
Say it again.
Swimming and eating properly. By that I mean 3 square meals a day. And because I have a tendency to try and control tiny little things when I'm feeling out of control, mm-hmm. and one of them is food, and I think that's, you know,
Let's be honest. You wouldn't know this from looking at her, but Emily has to eat all day. She says square meals, but she needs to eat all day. Quite a lot of biscuits, quite a lot of chocolate, all day. I mean, look at her. She's absolutely slender as you like. So it's not three square meals, Emily. It's all day.
Okay, I have to eat all day.
You're a grazer.
Yeah, exactly. But if I don't, but you know, if I don't look, basically, it's if I don't look after myself, then you know, my anxiety is always there waiting to kind of exactly smash the place up.
I do feel like it's an early. I do feel as though it's an internal, like a cockpit in a plane. I think it's if those alarms are going off, it's because something's not right, and you have to take a step back and engineer it and fix it. That's how I look at it, and I think I operated on anxiety my entire life. And actually, the best thing that happened was when I booked a holiday with friends via a WhatsApp group online, booked the rental car online, booked the Airbnb online, and then got to the airport and was like, oh, I have to actually do this. But talking about a holiday, talking about with my friends, and then that was the holiday when I basically was like, yes, I need help. Mm. Because as soon as I was away, it was... couldn't even go to the supermarket, and now I was suddenly away.
Oh, I see you booked it without thinking about it at the time when you were unable to leave the house.
Because I like to talk the talk, because I'm like you, I isolate myself, but I can do it very socially. I can be like blah 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 blah, social butterfly on WhatsApp. So it was like, yeah, this is going to be great.
And yes, your virtual presence.
I tell you what people say about it. They say, you know, because I isolate and I end up thinking about death quite a lot, and it gets very bleak and it gets very scary, because every time I come up with a solution for myself, I have a more powerful reason why that is not going to work.
Right.
And I can't remember what I was going to say.
That's okay, because it was a big thing. You'll come back to it.
Oh, it'll
fine.
Come back to me.
But I think anxiety is very interesting, and I think you're right. There's no shame if it's out there. And
oh, I know what I was going to say.
Go ahead.
So people say, if you're feeling anxious, tell someone, talk to people. Mm-hmm. And my thing was always, what am I supposed to say? I am incredibly frightened. Mm. I wouldn't want to impose on someone to call and say, hi, it's me. I'm just going to tell you I'm really frightened. Oh, what are they going to say to that? So, you know, it really isolated me to the point where, and also the no sleeping.
Oh, me and insomnia are good friends.
Yeah, but pals. I woke up at 1, 3, 4, 5, 7.
Prime insomnia, although 4 is not a prime number. But anyway.
Yes. But nearly.
We should make that a thing.
Yes, exactly.
But the other thing about anxiety is it's fucking funny. So we had that in the book. You know, the whole book is about all the little things you worry about and all the little things that flash through your anxious, hyper-alert brain. Mm. And the other thing about anxious people is they're amazing because they're very empathetic. They're always prepared. Mm-hmm. They think ahead. And so the book really isn't, you know, it really isn't a sort of terrible, you know, sort of depressing...
No, for example, there's a long bit about all the things we think about during sex, basically, like, have I put passata on the Ocado list? Shit, focus on what you're doing. Stop thinking about all the other things that you're doing. But it's true, you know, to try and kind of to
compartmentalize.
Thank you. The brain to focus on what you're doing in the moment.
The moment?
Oh, I know.
This is the thing about be present, live in the moment. But if I'm not thinking about later, then something will unravel. The fact.
Complete control.
Yeah. So I find the whole living in the moment thing really... I kind of understand the thing of, like, go for it or buy those shoes or whatever. But to me as well, those are also irresponsible things to do. If you
agree.
Haven't thought ahead, have I got the money for it?
Yeah, you can't fly by the seat of your
pants. We should clearly all be meditating.
We try.
You might be.
Sometimes.
Once a year.
It's true. I pretend meditate. I'm sure that's the thing. Pretenditation.
I have many, many apps on my phone. Many meditation apps.
Do you sit and think about not thinking?
No, I sit and think about the fact that I've got all these meditation apps on my phone and what I should do with them.
Also the moment thing. You're like, is this the moment? Are we in the moment? Or are we thinking ahead? What?
I find it very confusing. And self-help books, to go back to what we were talking about earlier, is I have read a lot. And your good friend and mine, Nadine Baggett, sort of raises her eyebrow at me. And I know that if I ever say anything that sounds a little bit too self-help booky, she gives me that
Can
look.
I recommend something?
Of course. Cut Nadine out right
now. No, rather than self-help Nadine. Books. But I would recommend the Brené Brown TED Talks.
Love a TED talk.
Because Brené Brown talks about shame and she talks about vulnerability and how difficult it is. And I would add, particularly as a modern woman, to be vulnerable. But beautiful things happen in vulnerable places. That's where things grow, right? When you're slightly out of your comfort zone. And rather than reading and being so tired that you have to read the same page 95 times. And also, the thing about those self-help books is that I think the language can be very, very annoying.
Yes.
Either it's too academic or it's incredibly cheesy. You know, even when you get someone like Pierre Melody, who is, you know, the idea is brilliant, but the language is intolerable. I'd say watch some Brené Brown.
I love a TED talk. And
do
that,
it.
I think generationally as well, you talk about the middle is very technically.
And it's 20 minutes and you're there with a really interesting idea that you could then pursue in your own head if you wanted to, rather than, you know, I'm not sure our concentration spans or our timetables are made for self-help books right now.
I 100% agree with you. That's why I like this book, because I don't have to...
This book being our book, I'm absolutely fine.
I'm absolutely fine. A Manual for Imperfect Women.
Just to be clear.
I was about to read the rest of the tagline, but then it's, this is an uncorrected proof and it's not for sale. So I shan't read that, although I just did.
The idea behind the book really is if we're, you know, is if we're not in it together, then we're not in it at all.
And I think that is what... Again, coming back to the point about my brilliant listeners, is that when I started being honest about the things that I was going through, the emails that came into my inbox with people saying, you made me, listening to you is like listening to myself. And as soon as I realized, Emma, you're nothing special. This anxiety lock that you're going through is not unique to you.
I think feeling special is very dangerous.
Yes.
I think that maybe a lot of drug addicts and a lot of comedians feel special and unique. And, you know, but I kind of know this to be true. And once you get over feeling special and join the human race, you're in with a better chance.
Yeah. But that was the thing. I was ashamed to talk about how I was feeling because I thought, no one's going to understand and I'm going to sound like a mad person and they are going to insist that I go to Arkham Asylum.
I now realise I seem much madder when I'm powering through in denial, you know, like a sort of battery-operated toy with no soul because I'm too scared to stop and think about what's actually happening.
Are you a buckaroo then?
Yeah.
Yeah. And fine, boom. Yeah.
And the other thing as well is that, you know, what with Instagram and social media, there is such a filter in, you know, literal and metaphorical, that people put on their lives so that you look at it and you think, oh, they're fine, look at them, they're on holiday all the time or whatever, and you know, it's just not true.
I feel like I look at Instagram now and if someone puts up like a beautiful picture of themselves with like the sunset in the background, I'm like, bullshit.
Yeah, you're clearly losing your mind, you know, your marriage is falling apart.
I feel like there are a few people, this sounds so awful, but I look at certain people's Instagram feeds and I think you're not in a good place. And I feel like I can sort of,
maybe we're developing a new language, which is, or a new skill, which is the ability to decode Instagram. Maybe we're kind of, you know, in the same way you see people and you think,
it's your superpower.
You look at someone and you think, oh, you know, there's something about you that I don't trust. Maybe we're now able to do that, you know, when we look at people's social media feeds.
But also the more perfection you're trying to throw out, the more you're hiding behind the perfection wall, the more you've got to hide, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that to your point.
Yeah.
And I think that... the more that people show a little bit of unravelling or whatever, the more connection you have with them.
Yeah. But then that's also turned into people doing very long posts about anxiety or depression and what have you. Sorry, I just banged the mic. But then that can also lead to people being oversharing. But then I also think if they're comfortable sharing it, certainly won't criticise it. But I definitely share. But there have been posts when I've nearly crossed a line for me. Because it is toothpaste out of the tube, you can't get it back.
No, absolutely. And it doesn't always just involve them.
No. But I think what the mid-op, what the mid-op does is it gives that voice, it gives that collective brain, the hive brain, to say, A, your thoughts aren't unique and that's actually a great thing. Everything that you're thinking is absolutely fine. You're on track. And I think that's a thing that as we get older, we're... I don't have a mortgage, I don't have a boyfriend / husband, I don't have children, and those are like signposts on the way to...
Well, I don't know if you noticed, but one of the things that we said when we started the mid-up was there would be no children on the mid-adult. Because, you know, they're lovely and they may be part of the landscape, but they can't be the point of the conversation for us. Because there are plenty of places that aggregate around kids. And first of all, if you have children, you know, it's easy, but it's kind of lazy. You know, we could sit and talk about, you know, toddlers or teenagers or whatever anyone may or may not have for 2 hours, but you kind of leave with nothing for yourself. There's no nutrition in that for you. And again, kids can be quite isolating. And secondly, there are plenty of people who don't have them and who might, A, be bored by a kid-centric conversation, or B, find it incredibly painful. Mm. I mean, I certainly got to a place where I couldn't look at pregnant women without feeling incredibly sort of hateful and resentful. I couldn't look at nappy adverts. I had to turn them off. I couldn't walk through, you know, maternity departments because it just got too painful. And that's still very real for me. So I didn't want people to be stabbed every time they read something that we had written or heard something that we said that was about babies again.
Yeah. And with me, I've never had the urge to have children. But what I've experienced is people telling me, well, you will, and also when you have them, you'll be up here with us. I'm like, piss off. I run my own business.
Yeah, like you've never known love, the cult of parenthood.
No, I mean, completely. And I think that all of those things, all of those judgments, all that checklist that you're supposed to have been given, that you have to fulfill in order to be what, you know, I think it's mad. And so,
in order to get the prize, what prize? There is no prize.
And one of the reasons why we called it imperfect, I mean, many reasons, but we had a meeting a year ago with a couple of girls who were in their late 20s, and they just wanted to know when is the right time to get married? When is the right time to...
One of them used the phrase, which I found really chilling, self-perfecting.
Oh.
She said, I'm interested in self-perfecting, and I said, the problem you're going to come across is extreme boringness if that's how you approach life. And also, you are talking to the wrong people.
Yeah, there is
however no flattering time. The lighting, we're not perfect.
No, oh my God.
Nor are we interested in being. I mean, you know, we say this in the book that we think perfection really is for other people. It's a very cruel mistress. Mm. It's chilly and it's unrealistic. And we think that the next big trend for women is going to be imperfection, not just dealing with it, but actually advertising it. Mm. You know, the texture that we all have. And we say, you know, feelings may not be unique, but people are unique. So all the different, you know, combinations of those feelings and how they kind of fuck with you is always going to be compelling. Whereas shiny, glossy perfection, not so much.
Well, I had Iskra Lawrence on this podcast who, I mean, she doesn't like the term, but to keep it neat, she is a size 16 model. She, I mean, she's stunning. But she talks about being perfectly imperfect. Mm. And I preferred that. I kind of like the direction that's heading into. And she's in her early 20s and she's communicating with people her age. And that's a really positive thing, I think, because I feel like what I definitely got from your book and when I log into the mid-old is... I feel as though I was given layers that I didn't necessarily want, what to have achieved by a certain date. And I feel like this community, because it is a forum-based website, and the book gives me permission to shed some of those layers that I don't need and have actually been holding me back. And I do feel like the truer version of me now exists. A lot of people might say that's just something that comes with age, but I do feel a lot of it also comes from speaking to people like you, either having you in my friendship circle or being able to go to your website or read your book.
What people believe is that as you get older, you get number. And there's a sort of dumbing down of feeling. And that's just not true. You just get better at not acting out on it. But it's still all happening. You're still, you know, triggered every hour of every day. So I think there was an endemic cultural misunderstanding of women between the ages of about 30 and 50. And they really think that we're all going to be talking about agas and, you know, root touch-ups.
I don't feel like my life is that much different from the way it was in my late 20s. And some people might think that's really sad. But I really like my freedom, and I really like that I can make decisions on the spot and on a whim.
But even though my responsibilities have shifted, my likes and my interests haven't changed. So that's the thing. It's not like I suddenly...
Interests. It's like when people say hobbies. When people say to you, so what are your hobbies? Do you remember on an old-fashioned CV at the bottom it would say hobbies?
Reading.
Yes, I used to write... Cinema. I mean, fuck's sake.
That's just sitting with a packet of crisps on the sofa, isn't it? Music. That's just the radio in the car. You know,
Netflix. Yeah. My hobbies now are Netflix and Dairy Milk.
I mean, I do have a yearning to do some pottery. And I've had this yearning for a couple of years. I've never acted on it, so maybe it's a fantasy
Swayze
rather than the yearning.
Yearning.
No, it's not. It's the idea of making a thing.
Yes.
And I'm not very artistic, so everything's usually quite cat candy. but I'd like to make a thing. So pottery is something I'd like to do. Do you have a fancy about what you might like to do?
We did make a book.
We made a book. That's a thing. That's true.
And you make a website and you write regularly.
No, but they're not things.
Do I have a secret fantasy hobby? No, but I quite like paddleboarding, she says.
She does.
Is that where you stand on a surfboard?
Yeah, and I feel incredibly like a warrior woman. Like I'm, here I am.
It's quite Moana, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. Paddling the water. It's so great. And I forget the fact that I'm, you know, half naked. It's so weird, half naked standing up on this like surfboard thing with a
stick.
I want to say an oar.
A big stick.
It is an oar, isn't it?
I think it is an oar. It's probably called like a paddle oar.
Oh, no,
something.
It would be a paddle, wouldn't it?
It's clearly a paddle. I don't understand the confusion. It's clearly a paddle.
Anyway, there you go. I like paddle boarding. But I'm not going to do that in... maybe I'll do that on the Thames. Can you paddleboard on the Thames?
I feel like the Thames is filthy.
I'd rather you didn't paddleboard on the Thames.
I swam in the Thames. I swam a mile for a junior diabetes charity in the Thames a couple of years ago. And they said, once you get out of the water, just drink a Coca-Cola because that will just basically kill anything that has entered into your system.
Really?
Yeah.
Good bacteria and bad.
Yeah.
All gone.
Crivens.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Crivens is the best word.
Do you know what? Yes, sorry. Oh, we don't usually talk about children, but I'm trying to stop my very small one from saying, "Oh, for God's sake." Oh, he's really tiny. And so I'm wondering if he should go, "Oh, man," or "Oh, bother." But actually, if I can make him say, "Oh, Crivens," then I figure I've won.
Yeah. It's from Georgie Dawson, who you may know.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, friend of the show. She said Crivens, and she got Kendall Jenner to say it. In the sense that I think she was around Kendall Jenner a lot, and then Kendall on Instagram like said Crivens. I understand.
And then Georgie had won forever.
Georgie had gone viral. Although, you know, Georgie didn't take any credit for it. But yeah, Crivens is a good one.
Thanks for that.
I would suggest that. On the website, you have divided the sections into body, feelings, sex and relationships, behaviour, listicles, and directories. How did you figure out how... I mean, you're journalists.
Well, we were trying to be much cleverer than that, and we even confused ourselves. So we thought, it's yet another opportunity to try and be witty, and it just all went really wrong.
Did you start with three, and then you were like, oh, no, we need that?
We kept adding. Also, quite a lot of them fit into every single one. So it fits in body and listicle and in sex and relationship and in feelings.
And anxiety, clearly.
Because it's a tag.
Directories is the only one that's really clear. And directories we're really proud of, actually, because directories are... This is where the sort of journalism background came in, because Emily was, you know, features editor of the Evening Standard, and I've written for everybody. Were very well researched lists of very useful things that people might need. So it might be top 20 divorce lawyers in the UK. It might be top 20 handymen. It might be curtain makers. It might be garden people. You know those when you're constantly wanting word of mouth recommendations. So we did some really, you know, we have someone amazing who did the legwork, and they are. incredibly useful, the directories. So maybe the next book will just be directories.
I know whenever we put them together, we slightly weep. Because when we put them out to the world, we know that there's somebody somewhere will go, oh, I need a plumber. Oh, the Minot has plumbers. And, you know, that
because plumbers are like, you know, the drug dealers of the grown-up woman. Because you're constantly texting going, you nearly here? How long ETA?
Also, you're very, you know, you don't share your the number to go, you can call him, but...
Yeah, I've got a guy. yeah, but you need to tell him that I recommended you.
Well, that's what happens. Yeah. Just move from drugs to plumbing.
No, I did like the fact that
unwise to combine the two.
Although now you're making me wonder about plumbers who do a bit of drug dealing on the side.
Well, you know, I mean, I could, you know, that might work. It's, you know, another what do they call it? Revenue stream.
I've got a metric ton of grout in the back. No, it ain't.
Also, brilliant. In films, don't they always hide the drugs in the loo? So
oh, in the yes. So they, what's it called? Is it called? Is it called a cistern? Oh,
yes.
Don't ask. They sell a taper under the cistern.
Zamo did that on Grange Hill.
Yes, well, quite.
Just say no.
Elderly listeners of the podcast will remember that, and by elderly I mean my age. Because yes, that was the big campaign.
That was the defining moment for kind of.
Because we grew up with Just Say No, and the AIDS adverts.
Yes.
Oh my goodness! I went on holiday. I went on this camping trip, which sounds improbable, and it was improbable.
I'm still in shock.
There was a place to plug
recently.
In. There was a place to plug in a Babyliss big hair, so it was fine.
No, like as in 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, as in 3 weeks. And there were quite a lot of teenagers there, quite a lot of sort of 15 to 18 year olds. And we realised, I don't know what we're talking about, that none of them knew what HIV was, which was an extraordinary sort of revelation. Like, how could they not know? They know about things like chlamydia and HPV, and but they did not know what it was. Or it was just, because that was, you know, for if you were in your sort of late 30s or early 40s, then... That was the thing, wasn't it?
MTV adverts. Every music break, there would be... And it would be...
It was the graveyard, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, there was
and
that
the barbed
one.
Wire.
Was it John Hurt who did the voiceover? But then I used to gorge on MTV, MTV Bait World. I think that was around VH1. And always in, it would be the ads, the public service announcements ads of AIDS, use condoms, and it would...
Don't share needles.
Yeah. No, it was really... And I find it really puzzling that... People aren't as aware. Sexually active young people don't know.
It was a surprise. Anyway, we gave them a really joyless lecture. You'll be pleased to hear.
A joyless lecture.
Poor little things.
While camping.
You know, and they were probably everyone was
carry
probably,
on camping.
Yeah, and all imagine the teenagers going, "Oh, please stop! Please don't say sex again."
But interesting that they know about things like chlamydia and HPV.
Yeah, they do. I mean, I guess that everything, you know, goes in, you know, trends. And also,
even
HIV
STIs.
Is livable with now. Whereas when we were growing up, it was, you know, it was
the death sentence.
The death sentence. Yeah. Sorry. I don't know how I quite managed to turn
but
the
also,
conversation to STD.
I think teenage girls are immunised against HPV.
They can be, yeah.
At 13. So...
Cripes. Well, safe sex, everyone.
Crivens.
Cripes and Crivens. Get your kid into Cripes and Crivens. That's the way forward. So why was body? Because body is the first one on the website.
Is that because it's alphabetical?
No.
Because it becomes for anxiety, yeah.
Well, anxiety, as you say, is the glue. But why was the body topic so relevant? Because it is so... tangled up in lots of anxieties and confidence issues.
Well, yes, but it was also just as much about, like, my lower back is killing me as it was, like, and I have back fat. You know, because there's that funny thing where, because I remember when I got, you know, when I got really, really fit, and there is a thrill in doing up a hot dress and zipping it up and thinking, oh, you know, this is great. But there's also a thrill in the idea that you can tie your own shoelaces when you're 70. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so it was about all the, and also it's about things like Emily having a bladder the size of a lentil, constantly needing to pee, the pee maths. So body wasn't just about the way that you look. And in fact, it was also about the way that you feel about, you know, about your body.
Yeah, and we talk a lot about micro injuries, how we're basically permanently, something's always hurting because we've, from paper cuts to stubbing our toes on the coffee table to, you know, shoulders in the gym or whatever
it is. But then there is also, you know, the secret mid-art behaviour. So, you know, things that we do when we look in the mirror, which is, you know, wave your arms and watch your bingo wings flap in the breeze, identify a new chin hair that wasn't there yesterday, but it's now 6 inches long. You know,
I had a nightmare about facial hair that had grown and I had not noticed, because you know it takes the wrong kind of light and you can miss it. And last night I had one that I could wrap around my fist like a hose.
There is, and yanked it out. Do you know about Face App?
I want to know about Face App.
Well, you can have a laugh with Face App, because can. I'm going to show you a picture, which is basically you can turn yourself into a man or you can give yourself a full beard, which I did last night. So now, actually, I'm showing
you're
Emma
really attractive.
And Emily.
Can I just say,
I look like some sort of Russian Cossack. I look great with a full beard, which is a very good thing considering it looks like that's where I'm going.
No, you also look like one of those SAS, like if you were instructing on Who Dares Wins on Channel 4, I wouldn't be surprised.
I'm getting Russell Brand's cousin kind of vibes.
Oh, I don't like that so much. Oh. But I'm going to show you these later, but Face App is very fun. You can turn yourself into a man, you can give yourself a Hollywood makeover, you can give yourself a beard. But anyway, yes, so the body section was, it's less about, you know, how do I get a thigh gap, and more about, how I feel about my, you know, have I got a bent bush because I got my wax done wrong and I'm now having sex and I feel a bit weird. So it's, you know, it's body, but in the mid-adult way.
And I think one of the things about, you know, becoming, getting, the more grown up you get, the more things start to change quite rapidly. And, you know, and I think you get quite, you can be quite shocked. Like, I just can't get over, I have a hair on my back that appears every sort of 3 months.
But also it's that thing about you think, gosh, I look tired today, and you realise you've been thinking that for 9 months and maybe it's just your face now.
Yes. And actually it's brutal. Getting old is brutal. It's hard. And like, if you can find the things, if you can get to a place at this age where you actually appreciate your body, your face, whatever it is, for the other reasons, then you'll kind of, you'll navigate this a bit more.
Yeah, you're laying
easily.
Some foundations down to, you know, your body being a beautiful thing because it works. And also we're at the age when we've got, you know, friends who are getting really sick or friends who are dying. And so if you can just, you know, just feel happy because, you know, your boobs might be sagging, but at least they seem to be, for today, healthy, then it makes you feel better.
Yeah, to live in the fun, not the dysfunction.
Yeah.
Or put the fun into dysfunction, which is where we live, really.
Yes. And you've talked as well a lot about hormones, which I am very interested in.
Hormones basically rule my life.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I've always been incredibly premenstrual, which, considering I'm quite angry anyway, imagine the road rage. But also, because everything shifts with your cycle a bit, and, you know, no one wants to talk about menopause because it's supposed to only happen to other people. But actually, it all starts to move around when you're in your late 30s.
Mm-hmm.
And really, we should all be getting our hormones tested, because then you know your baseline. So if you come to want to take HRT or bioidentical hormones, you'll know what your body likes to tolerate.
Yeah.
So we talk about hormones a lot, because also, you know, basically it turns me into Barbara Streisand at full moon.
I think also the idea that
you're... For about, by the way, 16 days a month now.
It does seem to be getting longer and longer.
I know, because I tell her, she's, how are you? And I go, oh, Jesus. But my period's due in 2 days. She goes, Annabelle, your period's always due in 2 days.
When the anxiety, the depression, for me, I then went to go and see a hormone doctor. I went to go and see my GP, who obviously said there's nothing wrong
obviously.
Here. Went to see a specialist who said there's an imbalance that we need to fix. And it has helped in part, but a lot of it has been about, it's given me the energy back to be able to go to the gym.
Testosterone? Yeah.
Progesterone. There was just a bit of imbalance, massively deficient in vitamin D as well, which is really significant. But what I think is very interesting about what you say, and I think everybody should do it, is if you understand what is going on with your hormones, and even the slightest little imbalance can make a difference. But it also means if you understand now, before you go into the menopause or hit perimenopause, you can sail that sea quite smoothly.
Yes, because you've got a blueprint of what your sort of ideal hormones should look like.
And I have spoken to people who said, as soon as I thought I was having any sort of menopausal issues, I went to the doctor and I didn't feel a thing and never had a hot flash, nothing, because I just put myself
under
that
person's care.
But also,
the thing is that what it can do is deliver a power surge. Because, you know, rather than thinking, oh God, menopause, terrible name, menopause, and now my skeleton's going to crumble and I'm going to be unfuckable and it's all going to be an absolute disaster, what it can do is release you from the tyranny of hormones doing whatever they want to do every month. So actually, I think it can be amazing. I mean, you know, I put it off. I should go and see my, you know, I haven't had my hormones tested for 2 years, and I should go along, and I forget to rub in the creams and all of that. I mean, you know, basically they're kind of okay. But also, it's not just biochemistry. If you get a good doctor, it might not just be what the levels say, it's also how you feel. So it's someone who will take both things into account.
And I think 100%. It's woeful how little we know about it, given, let's say, we've been having periods for like 1,000, you know, years. It feels like that way, anyway.
I think,
and
yes.
And you know, and still you go, oh, why am I behaving like a psychopath? Or why do I feel like crying all the time? Or why does everything hurt? Or whatever it is, whatever, however your symptoms work.
And then you all go, of the above.
Yeah. And then you go, oh yeah, of course it's my period. And you just think, oh my God, like every month this happens. And we're somehow so trained to kind of not think about it, not talk
societal.
About it, so much shame.
I mean, when Apple developed their, you know, on the iPhone, it comes with a health app that's built in. In the first few iterations of that, there was nothing about menstrual cycles because women weren't taken into account. That's why.
Was it developed by a man?
Of course. Obviously. So, you know, and they sat there and they went, oh, you know, whatever.
We've got all this covered, blood pressure. You know, how many steps a day?
Cholesterol, you know, and...
Tick, tick.
But nothing about... And I think that that's the thing, you know, the more conversations that we can have about, you know, everything from periods to menopause.
And I think, actually, I think it's, you know, this, you know, it's, you know, it's easier now for women to talk about anxiety because they are less likely to be dismissed as the hysteric or the neurotic, you know, because men get anxiety too now. So, you know, it's to do with, you know, the things that are happening, you know, in the... You know, hashtag me too.
I love the fact that you have talked about laughter and anxiety so much, but I also love the fact that, and I properly ROFL'd, which was 40 is the new fuck off.
Oh, yes.
I love that.
Good.
Yeah. What was the old fuck off?
Well, it was the idea was that the 40 is the reason I did that was because it was the idea that 40 is the new 30. No, it isn't. If you think that, you can fuck off. 40 is just what it is. It's just, you know, we're grown up and we're living our lives, and then 50 is the new 40. You end up with this like crazy impossible mathematical calculations.
Yes. Sort of age dysmorphic as well.
Yeah,
like, you are what you are.
Yeah. I think that we're dealing with it's a relic, really, of an artificial slicing up of generations that happened, I think, way back in the 60s. I mean, you might call it Generation X, Y, you know, whatever, you know, Z now.
I can't keep up with the different
slices. But really, they're slicing it all up, and we need to look at it in terms of mindset, because there was a time when youth was an island, and if you weren't on it, you didn't know what they were doing. But now there's the internet, and we're all hyper-connected, and I can find out exactly what 18-year-olds are interested in if I want to know. But that also goes to the idea that, you know, you're either as a woman, you're only allowed to be one thing. So you can be busy working mum, or you can be, you know, deranged cougar, or you can be tragic spinster. Actually, who are? I don't know any of those women. So,
yeah, it's like the Sex and the City slices. Are you Carrie? Are you Miranda?
Do you remember those endless quizzes?
Yeah.
Actually, I did the Hogwarts quiz last weekend to find out, and actually, I'm quite proud of this.
Gryffindor?
Slytherin, and I didn't think I was that Machiavellian.
I've got such a fucking resentment because I was Hufflepuff.
Oh, yeah.
You were.
Sorry.
Okay.
At least you're not the
other
one.
It's the Pottermore
Ravenclaw
thing, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes.
You were Ravenclaw.
No, a Gryffindor. But I knew what to say. I mean, to skew the results.
Did you hack it?
I basically, like, I Sharon Stoned the lie detector test on the Hogsworth thing.
But I mean, I'm basically Voldemort.
Hogwarts.
Yes.
But there's a lot to be said for.
I wasn't agreeing with the fact
that he was
Voldemort.
Yeah, he was clever. Very clever. Yeah. That's not a bad quality.
Oh, now you're so nice. You're trying to make me feel better about being Voldemort. Don't worry. I'm okay.
But the thing is that Harry was, he said, not Slytherin, not Slytherin, not Slytherin. And the hat says, not Slytherin, eh? And suggested that he could have been good in Slytherin.
Are you a Harry Potter fan?
Yeah.
I just don't remember that part, but I love that you do.
Oh, I remember that part.
Do you?
Yes, because the whole point is that he speaks... The snake
Puzzle
language,
mouth.
Yes, very good.
Oh, so he could have been.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the hat says, the hat goes by his request not to put him in Slytherin.
The hat doesn't work like that in life, does it?
You could do great things in Slytherin. Leslie Phillips, ding dong. But yes, he could have been in Slytherin.
Sorry about the Harry Potter thing.
What would your Patronus be?
Oh, I don't know. I would like it to be... Can you choose?
I don't know.
You can do a quiz, I'm sure. I'd want it to be either a bird of prey or... No, I'd want it to be an eagle, yeah.
Yeah, eagle.
Why not? Yeah.
I think sure. I'd want it to be a bear.
I would not mess with a bear, ever.
But that's because... That's just fantasy, because I'm so easily messed with. So... I'd love my avatar to be, or my Patronus to be something fearful.
I could be your bear.
You could, actually. Yeah. You are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With my beard.
Why did we get on to Harry Potter?
Sorry.
No, it's fine. I love it. I've been to Harry Potter
quizzes.
World.
I tell you how, quizzes, yes. About who you were in Sex and the City. And the idea was, I guess, if you were promiscuous, you were Samantha. Mm. If you were
uptight.
If you were uptight, you were Charlotte. If you were, you know, sort of professional and boring, you were Miranda. And we all wanted to be Carrie.
But I have a big issue with this. Carrie is a complete and utter douchebag.
Nowadays, Miranda would be the protagonist.
Yes.
20 years on, Miranda would be the central character.
I agree. And her search for everything, for all the things that she's looking for, I totally identify.
And also, when Miranda cried, I cried.
Yeah. But also, I didn't like Carrie at all. What an insufferable, awful succubus of a friend. awful. But my biggest bugbear with Sex and the City is it's basically the Golden Girls, which is far superior.
Oh, I love. Thank you for being a friend.
We love the Golden Girls.
I know.
Dorothy's Bornak.
Yeah. I mean, just, I love. I love. I can now practicing the theme tune, which you really don't want me to do, actually, because I can neither sing or...
But she does like to sing.
Do you now? Oh, you should join our karaoke club.
Yes, please. I've never done karaoke.
Do you have one?
Yeah.
Okay, so how does that work? Is it in your house or do you go to a place?
Oh, no. It's nights out, margaritas, guacamole and tortilla chips.
What's your signature tune?
Well, it would be Formation from Beyoncé Lemonade, but you can't get it in karaoke.
So what is
establishment?
It?
So it has to be like Madonna Borderline.
Oh, that's a good
very
one.
Good. Okay.
Yeah. Or Pat Benatar.
What, Love is a Battlefield?
Love is a Battlefield or Heartbreaker.
I would like to sing. I'm telling you, I'm not going by Dreamgirls. But nobody wants to hear that.
Oh, do you have the range?
Of course not.
Do you have the range?
I love you. You're basically my best friend now. Sorry. I have no range.
Oh, I mean, I can lip sync it like a mother. Oh. I really can do a good job on that.
Your car karaoke on that one, it's like my favourite thing.
Yeah, oh, her voice is incredible. I went to go and see Dreamgirls recently. Didn't enjoy it as a whole thing, but that song is amazing.
The film or theatre you went to?
Theatre.
Can't do theatre.
Why not?
Okay, here I go.
Many reasons. I want to know. I want to know.
First of all, because I don't like the middle class self-satisfaction of it, that people are there and they howl with mirth at a joke that in real life might make your mouth twitch a bit, but probably wouldn't. I don't like being trapped in a big fire trap where I will constantly need to pee and I can't get out and we'd all burn like little buns. There's nothing I like about theatre. You can keep it.
Also, 7:30 start. Like, who can get anywhere for 7:30?
Well, it either has to be... It should really be a 6 o'clock start. So you can be in bed by 10. I like to be either so basically I like to be in bed by 10, except for about twice a month when I'll do like a 2 a.m.
Right. Are you somebody who, when you get into bed, that's it, like sleep?
When I get to bed, what, that's it, the demons arrive? Yes, that's right. That's who I am. The demons arrive and they say, you will never have any money, you will never have sex again, you've always been a fraud, why didn't you buy that house when you could have done, you're probably dying, and maybe that would be best. Yes, the that's thing, what happens.
But that's
glad the, you asked, Emma.
No, I was curious about whether you fell asleep immediately or whether
yes,
you read.
Yes, I pass out immediately and then wake up about 3 hours later.
That's to do, interestingly, you can break that cycle with changing the time of day at which you eat.
You believe that?
I do, actually. Because what? I do think the gut is the second brain. It's to do with, there's a spike in cortisol earlier than there should be because, I'm going to forget the actual science of it now, but I, for the most part, do intermittent fasting, which is 16 hours, and if I eat between 12 and 8 and I stop eating at 8, I can guarantee that within two days I am sleeping solidly, because I don't do the greys at like 10 o'clock or have a cup of tea, and then that doesn't force my, it's something to do with the cortisol wakes you up earlier than it should, and so your body goes, oh, I must be worried, but it actually could be to do with the cortisol coming into your bloodstream too early. It should be coming in at 6 o'clock to wake you up, but it comes too early.
It comes at
too
3 soon. Or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
I think gut health is completely compelling if I sort of had the concentration to really study it properly.
I've had a couple of nutritionists on this show, and I actually, when I came back from that holiday and I was a complete mess, I went to a nutritionist, a Chinese doctor, a TCM, and various other things, and I had my gut analysed, which involved 3 days of unpleasantness, but yes. There we go. And it was a complete revelation,
so,
and it explained...
How has it changed? What have you changed in your diet or, you know, as a result?
To cut a long story short, it revealed that there are three particular types of bacteria that you produce in the gut that produce serotonin, which is 95% of your serotonin is produced in the gut. And I didn't have any evidence of growth or presence of two of them.
Ah, okay.
And so I did, it was with a nutritionist who's been on this podcast called Eve Kalinick.
I've heard she's supposed to be amazing.
And I did 2 weeks of eating very simply and taking various, I want to say herbs, but they're more, they're punchier than that. And then I did 2 weeks of reintroducing and taking a different set of things. And literally, I had 18 months of basically not going to the loo properly at all. And literally after those 4 weeks... like clockwork every morning.
And the sleep? Or was sleep not your problem?
Sleep has always been a bit of a problem. I had a bit of a bother with it last week. But again, if I just go 16, 8, boom, two
and
days.
Does that mean you don't eat before 12 and don't eat after 8?
Yep.
You remember I did it for a bit?
Yeah. And it's much easier than you think once you get into it. But if your hormones come in and you wake up and the first thing you think is croissant, it's really hard to make it to 12. And that's the problem. Hormones, I don't think... I spoke to speak to my brother about this sometimes. He can stick to anything. And I'm like, you don't understand. You don't understand that feeling.
I always think of croissant.
Mm.
Yeah, hormones are, you know, the great saboteur, really, aren't they?
Mm. The other one.
Yeah. It's like the other you. And in she comes and just, you know, starts throwing things, shouting at people.
Although we call your...
Roger. It's my premenstrual alter ego, Roger. Roger is in the building. Yeah. There's a story. I can't bother to tell you, but Roger.
Roger.
Yeah.
No, at Karaoke Club.
Hi, Roger. Yeah. Love Karaoke Club.
Oh, well, you know who the chairwoman is?
Who?
It's Baggett.
Nadine Baggett. She's a dark horse. What's her signature tune?
Oh, well, she always does...
Is she a rapper?
Yes, she is.
I was saying that as a joke. She's actually
no,
a rapper.
She is. She loves a bit of Beyonce, but she's also a good rapper. She loves rap music. Every time I go around to her house, I'm like, are the people next door playing music? She's like, no, I've got Lemonade on upstairs. Because she's so young. Honestly, that's why she and I get on, is because we're both children. We're both quite... There's a part of us that's still the 17-year-old at school who's listening to the music to impress the boy that we like. Yeah.
But I think that's good. I think that's brilliant. Like, I want to be like that too.
Mm.
I just keep... I just do not want to be a grown-up in the way that we thought grown-ups were.
Well, that's still. If you were, then we'd all be sitting here, you know, in button-up cardigans and sensible shoes.
Yeah, I do not want to be Ferris Bueller's parents. Do you know what I mean?
You know, we would have been extinguished by this age.
And well, you know what you and I would have done by now?
What?
Would have cut our hairs and cut our hair into
cut
bobs.
Our hairs.
Cut our
we
hair.
Would have cut our hairs.
I've already, but I've done the bob. I do the mum bob. It was a depressing but true
Yeah, I remember being told, I'm sure, or reading somewhere as a kid that you couldn't have long hair over 30, I think it was.
I remember it was over 14. Do you remember in Neighbours there was a character, I don't know if she's still in it, called Susan Kennedy, who had really gorgeous long brown hair, and she's married to Dr. Kennedy, and
I remember she had black hair.
Yeah, they had their hair hiatus, and she came back and she had it cut really short, and it was an
mum
indicator
hair.
Yeah, it was an indicator of she was too old for long hair. What poppycock.
I know. Crivens. Just testing.
But I like the idea of, because midlife crisis is something perhaps we've previously been scared of or expected, or I wonder what my midlife crisis is.
We don't think about it in terms of midlife crisis. We think about it in terms of many, many crossroads rather than crises. Mm. You know how your day has these little granular crossroads that happen, you know, constantly, and different paths and choices you can take and different things that happen with your mood. It doesn't necessarily have to be a macro crisis.
Mm-hmm.
It can be all the little micro ingredients that, you know, that lead you in various directions.
But I like the sense I get from the book and from the site is that all of these crossroads are fine, acceptable, and again, they're bookmarking you on the right path.
Yeah, and we're all having them.
Mm. And it's okay to be not okay.
Yeah.
In fact, that's kind of more interesting.
And it's interesting at that dinner party where you said, actually, I'm really anxious, I'm not sleeping, and I'm worried about death. Everyone had their own version of that.
Yeah. And so what happened is, you know, as Emily was saying, then you kind of connect. Mm. And, you know, if you're sort of 35 to 45, then you're part of the generation that kind of moved from analog into digital. Mm. So we still, you know, we grew up with that connection where, you know, you would get home from school and you'd call the girl you'd been with all day and talk to her for 4 hours in the evening. Your parents would go, I don't understand.
Yeah.
But, you know, we still need that. And the thing about social media is that, you know, we love it and we love, you know, Instagram and we love Snapchat and we make very cute bunnies with garlands on our heads. But it is curated lies.
Yeah.
People are showing you what they want you to see and it, you know, so...
I think the other thing is that the more we share about it, the more, you know, I was at something the other day and I said, how are you? And my friend said, you know, I don't really feel validated at work and I've got a chest infection and I feel, you know, pretty shit. And I was like, you know, she's like, how are you? And I said, my therapist has gone away for 6 weeks to Peru, but, you know, I think I'm going to be okay. And we had this amazing moment where we actually said, mm-hmm. we told each other exactly how we were at that point.
Mm. We're becoming more literate in feelings.
Well, also it's remembering that, you know, that how are you is a question.
Mm.
You know, you can choose whether or not to answer it. There are certain people you don't want to unburden yourself on.
I like the fact that Bryony Gordon starts her podcast, Mad World, with how are you? And it's not superficial, it's how are you?
Mm. You know, it's what they call checking in with yourself. So it's really a question we should be asking ourselves every now and again. I try and do it in the bath. I just try and sit down and think. Because I'm so turbocharged, I try to go, well, I wonder how I'm feeling, because I find it really hard to know.
How do you know if you find it hard to know? Because I'm exactly the same.
I'm just still for a second, and I just sort of think about how the day's gone, and quite often I don't know.
Mm.
And it's funny to be in your 40s and never really have any idea how you're feeling, because it's also scary. But
I get Annabelle to tell me.
She says, you're hungry and you need to go to the loo,
basically.
Yes, and please make an appointment with XYZ.
Yeah. It's true. It's true. Sad, but true.
I think I used to, I don't know if you have experience of this, of waiting for somebody to say to you, oh, I think you might be a bit happy, or I think you might be a bit down. And then I would lean into that feeling, to use a self-help phrase. Whereas I think, again, and it comes out in the book.
But often when people tell you how you're feeling, they're telling you how they're feeling. So you have to be careful not to mistake information about someone else for information about you. You know, if it's someone you completely trust who knows you very well, who says, do you know, I think you're running on empty and I think you're a bit anxious, be careful, that's fine.
Mm.
But you know those awful conversations where people go, are you all right? Because you seem a bit tense. Mm. And actually you're fine, but now you're not all right. So I think, you know, careful who you listen to.
Mm. And also, don't believe everything you think. That's one, when I read that, I was like, oh.
Yeah.
Because the reality that the brain creates is really, and again, coming back to I'm absolutely fine, every single thought that you can try and convince yourself is true is kind of on these pages. And you take the sting out of it, you take the bleakness out of it, and you sort of shove a rainbow in there. And even when you're talking about, is that thing cancer, is that thing, is, you know, the death talk, it's there's like a silver thread through it now, and it's not as terrifying.
Maybe it's because we know that everyone else is thinking it as well. And also because this stuff, the bleak stuff, is funny. You know, that's the thing. It's, you know, it's really, really funny. Even in, you know, slapstick comedy, if someone slips on a banana skin and it doesn't hurt, it's not funny.
Mm.
You know, the comedy is in the pain. So we're all feeling it. We're all slightly sweating over it.
Mm.
So, you know, why not have a laugh about it?
I think so. And it just makes it less of a bothersome thing. Mm. And it makes it less heavy. And as soon as you open... the internal saboteur, as soon as you kind of... open the curtains and let the sunlight in, they do tend to do a Dracula and just kind of not disappear but become less powerful.
Yeah, I completely agree. You know, it's very easy to walk around feeling as though you're carrying something very, very heavy.
Mm. So if listeners are thinking, I feel like I'm a mid-adult, I feel like I need to to absorb more of what Annabelle and Emily have to say, where can they go?
Well, they can go to themidart.com. Mm-hmm. They can go to themidart on Instagram. And they can buy I'm Absolutely Fine,
a manual for imperfect women.
And the link to all of those things, listeners, is obviously going to be in the show notes. I've had a lot of fun. This has felt like free therapy, though.
Thanks for having us, Emma.
Loved it. Good. Do you need the loo?
Yes.
Thank you so much for being on the show, listeners. As I said, all of the links will be in the show notes. And if you want to follow us, I'm at Emma Guns. Annabelle, you are?
At Annabelle Rifkin.
At Emily McMeekin.
And we will hope to see you on the next one. Thank you so much for listening. But before you go buying I'm Absolutely Fine, because I know that you probably want to right now, why not get in touch? Drop me an email at thebeautypodcast@gmail.com or slip into my DMs on Instagram and Twitter, where I'm at Emma Guns. You can also join the private Facebook group for the podcast, which is very busy and lovely and a very safe space, which the link to join is in the show notes on Apple Podcasts, Acast, wherever it is that you might be listening, streaming, downloading this particular episode. And obviously, while you're there, I would think it would be a rather lovely idea to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode. And if you feel so inclined, I would be so delighted if you could maybe leave a little review and a 5-star rating for this show. It makes such a difference for a show like mine to stand out on these massive, massive podcast platforms. Thank you so much for listening. I'll be back next week with another fabulous guest, and I will see you on the next one.
Shopify helps you sell at every stage of your business. Like that, let's put it online and see what happens stage.
And the site is live.
That we opened a store and need a fast checkout stage.
Thanks, you're all set.
That count it up and ship it around the globe stage.
This one's going to Thailand.
And that, wait, did we just hit 1 million orders stage? Whatever your stage, businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com/listen.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.